In Singapore, a tragic story unfolded when a man, desperate to impress his girlfriend, fixated on a Rolex watch worn by a woman called Madame Po, a local beautician. Blinded by his need to impress, his obsession led to a shocking decision. Today's case is a reminder of the dangerous lengths one might go to for love and validation. Let's talk about the Rolex watch murder in Singapore. So it was the early morning of April 20th, 1998. Everyone was starting their day, some headed to work, others to school. But that morning, something horrible happened near the Marina South bus stop. There was an empty car parked with no owner around, police tape everywhere, and a body found in the nearby woods. The body was identified pretty quickly because her personal belongings were still with her. She was a beautician named Sally Po. She worked on small photo shoots and in low-budget movies at the time. Once they knew who she was, the police called her family, including her husband, Lee Boon Siang. It was horrible news for him and their two kids. Madame Po had planned to meet a client that day, so she left home early. Lee said that the night before, someone had called his wife about helping with a photo shoot. He overheard the call, but never imagined it would lead to something like this. His wife was found with a bloody head, a cut wrist, and it was clear she was murdered. This was no accident. At first, it didn't look like a robbery, but then he realized his wife's Rolex watch, which she had been wearing that morning, was missing. The police then questioned Lee about what he knew and who the client might be. Mr. Lee told them that he heard the client's name was Lai Zhou. That was all they had to go on. It didn't take too long to figure out that Lai Zhou wasn't the real name. Some quick asking around revealed that it was actually Liar Zhou, and people knew who Liar Zhou was. His real name was Tengu Jonaris Badlisha, but most people just called him Jonaris. He wasn't just some regular guy, he was a prince. His uncle was the Sultan of Kedah, part of a Muslim dynasty in the Malay Peninsula. Despite his royal connection, Jonaris didn't live a life of luxury. Maybe it was because he was just a nephew, not a direct heir. He had a normal job as a freelance assistant cameraman and prop assistant. Not much is known about Jonaris' early life, other than he was 23 years old at the time. But we do know his mother was Elizabeth Seet, a Singaporean woman, and his father was Tengku Abdul Hamid Thani from Malaysia. He also had an older brother, but his name has been kept private. Jonaris' life turned tough when he was just 2 years old. That's when his parents divorced, and he moved to Singapore with his mother. Later on, his mom remarried a man named Robert Seya, and they lived in the Seletar Hills area in Singapore. Elizabeth and Robert had their own kids, and that's when things got really bad for Jonaris and his brother. Robert was a terrible stepfather, abusive to both boys. Even their mother joined in on the abuse. Jonaris and his brother were treated horribly. It was almost like torture. They were forced to kneel for hours, had clothes pegs clipped to their tongues, lips, fingers, and ears, and were beaten with a cane and belt. They had to chew raw chili and stand in front of a mirror for hours if they disobeyed. And in public, their own mother would refer to them as her nephews, not her sons. It was a truly heartbreaking situation for these boys. Jonaris finished college in 1998 and started focusing on his career. At that time, he was earning around $2,000 a month in Singapore, which was pretty decent before inflation kicked in. He was earning $2,000, but he was spending around $4,000 a month just on sexual pleasures. He had a favorite woman he saw regularly named Saifun Namu, who was of Thai descent and 8 years older than him. In addition to his excessive brothel visits, Jonares was also known for being a pathological liar, which earned him the nickname Liar Joe. He would brag about things that weren't true, like claiming he bought an expensive DuPont lighter for 3 times its actual price. He even lied about Siphon's occupation to his friends, claiming she was a flight attendant living in a condo in Orchard, which wasn't true. Jonares was very obsessed with Siphon to the extent of sending money to her son back in Thailand. As Siphon's birthday approached in April 1998, Jonares was desperate to find a gift. He remembered that Siphon once had a Rolex watch given by her ex-husband, which she missed after it was pawned following their divorce. He thought it would be romantic to give her something she longed for. But buying a Rolex was out of his financial reach, and borrowing more money wasn't an option. And then he remembered seeing a beautician, whom he met at a photo shoot, wearing a Rolex. So Jonares, posing as Nigel, called Madame Po on April 19th, offering her $1,000 for a photo shoot, more than double her usual fee. He asked her to meet at the Super Bowl Golf and Country Club near the Marina South bus stop early in the morning. He didn't realize that Po and Lee would mishear his name as Lai Joe, linking him to his Liar Joe nickname, which eventually led to his arrest in this case. Madame Po, seeing the offer as very profitable, accepted it without hesitation. She drove to the Marina South bus stop early in the morning around 6:30 a.m. on the day of the murder. There, she was approached by Jonares, who knocked on her car window and told her that Nigel and the crew would arrive soon. Po parked her car, and she and Jonares waited together for the bus. Jonares was probably looking around for the right moment to strike, while Madame Po had no idea of the danger she was in. And suddenly, Jonares hit Madame Po in the head with a hammer from behind, knocking her unconscious. He then dragged her body into the bushes behind the bus stop, about 10 meters away. But Madame Po regained consciousness and tried to escape. Jonares hit her again with a hammer. After over 10 strikes to the back of her skull, Madame Po was motionless. To ensure she was dead, Jonares cut her wrist with a knife. He then took her bloodied Rolex watch and fled before anyone noticed. He just went to take a nap after committing the murder. Jonares then headed to the brothel at Lorong 18 Geylang, where Siphon worked, to give her his gifts. He brought a bouquet of red roses, a cake, and a bottle of whiskey. Siphon was happy with the gifts, especially the watch, though she joked about it not being new because it was without a box. Jonares tried to go on with his life as if nothing happened, but the police were conducting their investigation. The specifics of their investigation weren't made public, but they moved quickly. Just 3 days after the murder, they tracked down and arrested Jonares, the Lai Joe they were looking for. He confessed soon after his arrest and was prepared for trial. The case drew a lot of attention, partly because he was a prince. Jonares went to trial just months after the murder on October 28th of the same year. Details of the trial weren't widely disclosed, but it was noted that Jonares always appeared well-dressed in court, not looking disheveled or distressed. The prosecution's account was crucial in understanding the case. Jonares had premeditated the murder to steal Madame Po's Rolex watch as a birthday gift for Siphon. He had seen Madame Po wearing the Rolex while working on a film production a couple of days before the murder, and started plotting to take it from her, knowing he couldn't afford such a luxury item due to his debts and spending habits. During the autopsy, Professor Chao Chichang found multiple fractures on the left side of Po's skull, with one fracture measuring up to 13 centimeters. The severity of these head injuries was such that even immediate medical attention wouldn't have saved Madame Po. She also had cuts on her wrist, but it was the head injuries that were fatal. The defense team tried to argue that Jonares was not mentally stable. Jonares himself admitted to being overworked and depressed in the days leading up to the murder. He was obsessed with the idea of getting the watch his girlfriend longed for, claiming it haunted his dreams. He felt compelled to get that watch at any cost and didn't care about any other belongings of Madame Poe. Jonares also claimed that during the murder, he felt out of control and couldn't stop attacking Madame Poe. He described a surreal experience where he couldn't hear her pleas for mercy. Once he had that watch, he felt a sense of relief. But this defense, of course, was challenged. The prosecution had a psychiatrist evaluate Jonares, who concluded that he did not suffer from any mental disorders. Jonares had a normal social life and work routine before the incident, including a relationship with his girlfriend. The prosecution argued that Jonares had meticulously planned the crime, even using a fake name with the victim, Madame Poe. They suggested his intention was not just robbery, but also to murder Madame Poe to prevent her from reporting him to the police, as indicated by him slashing her wrists. After the crime, Jonares maintained a calm demeanor, further casting doubt on his claim of mental disturbance during the killing. The trial lasted 19 days, and Jonares was found guilty of premeditated murder and sentenced to death by hanging. He filed an appeal in February 1999, but it was unsuccessful. The exact date of his execution was not publicized, but it occurred in the same year he lost his appeal. In the aftermath, Siphon was not treated as an accomplice and returned to Thailand to avoid public attention. The case is a tragic example of a life taken for selfish and greedy reasons. It's a story that shows how important it is to keep our values straight and remember what's really important in life. In the end, Jonares' obsession cost way more than just a watch. It cost a life, and that's something you can never get back. That's all for today. Stay tuned for more, and as always, thanks for watching.